Time now for White Spot Giants this week.
Back come the Giants across the line. Kosh, left wing, looks, waves, finds a man, fits and scores! In he comes! Stop by David Tendick, he kept it out! Oh, mercy, what a save by Tendick! Up the middle comes Byram, right side, Ronning, and the circle scores!
Here's your host, Dan O'Connor.
Well, good evening and welcome to yet another edition of White Spot Giants this week. We are on the home of Vancouver hockey. We are on the home of the Giants Sportsnet 650. And as the month of November winds down, we continue the conversation of hockey. And today is going to be a really fun show. Coming up in segment number two, we are going to head to Alberta for, well, actually, we're in the Alberta area for both of these interviews. Today, we're going to the University of Alberta for segment number two. We're going to chat with Giants alumnus Dylan Plouffe, former Giants defenseman, parts of five seasons with the team. We're going to talk to Dylan Plouffe in segment number two. But to kick off the show, we are going to, again, head to Alberta, where we are going to be joined by a fellow that had two separate stints behind the microphone with the Vancouver Giants. He is a veteran of over 30 years of broadcasting experience. You can hear him on Edmonton Radio, doing the morning sports, also doing CFL play-by-play for the Edmonton football team in the Canadian Football League. Honored, privileged as always, to welcome Morley Scott to the conversation. Morley, hello to you, my friend. Good to have you. Thanks for taking the time. And loaded question, I realize these days, but how are you, my friend?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I'm good. I'm happy to be here, Dan. The full year and parts of a couple of other year that I spent doing Vancouver Giants on radio was one of the best years I've had in my radio career. I really enjoyed my time there. So anytime you want to talk Giants hockey, I'm your guy for sure. As far as how I'm doing, I'm like everybody else. I'm just waiting for this thing to be over. I'm tired of working from home, but I'm going to be here for a while as we try to get our way through this thing. So hopefully everybody out there is staying safe and staying happy and getting through this.
So let's start from the beginning, Morley. Tell me about your introduction to the Vancouver Giants and how this relationship came to be.
Well, like most jobs you get them when you need them when you're unemployed, and I was unemployed. I got the old we're going a different direction conversation from the Edmonton Oilers after working on Oiler games for 16 years, and I started looking around. I took a year off, and I started to look around, and an opening came up in Vancouver, and I quickly communicated with Ron Toigo, and just quickly moved to the next step for an interview, and then went out to Vancouver and met everybody, and it didn't take me long to decide that that was a place I'd want to be and a place I'd want to work, because it's such a great organization, and you know, it's in a great area of the country. So it was a no-brainer for me to become the play-by-play guy for the Vancouver Giants for a year.
So from there, and in some of the articles I've read, Morley, I mean, it felt as though you kind of took to the city, you took to the organization, and you took to the group very quickly. On the ice, when you're calling these games, I don't think people realize that there is a difference from the NHL to junior, even just from an accessibility standpoint, from a comfort standpoint, even just from a being one of the guys' standpoint. Can you talk first just about the day-to-day rigors of the job and just how, maybe dare I say, refreshing it was to kind of step into a junior hockey team like the Giants at that time?
Yeah, it was very refreshing. It was kind of neat, and the best thing I can say about my experience was the inclusion I had. I mean, I worked out in Ladner at the practice facility, and my desk was right in the middle office, and I mean, Scott Bonner's office was to my left, Don Hayes' office was across the way from me, and I'd have conversations with them all the time, and it was so cool to be kind of be on the inside of it, looking out and hearing the conversations that as a media guy anywhere else, I never was privy to those kind of conversations about players, about possible trades, about things that happened in the organization. So it was a real eye opener for me. And I always, it's one of the things I always say, I thank the Giants for allowing me to have that access and have that experience, because it was, as I said, it was one of the best of my career, and everybody looked after me very well, treated me very well. It was a really good group. I had an awful lot of fun too, some great laughs, and that's what, that's, you know, kind of on the management side. Ian Gallagher was there as well, and Sergei Svechkovsky was an assistant coach too, and there was a lot of laughter in that room every day, which was great for me. Then the other aspect of it with the players was cool, because the players had, I had two roles, right? Obviously, like you do, I'm not just the radio guy. I'm also a media relations, and I'm setting up interviews for guys, and I'm doing whatever I can to help them in that aspect. So they kind of looked at you in a different light, and sometimes came to you and asked you questions about how to deal with certain things, which was kind of cool. As far as the players go, they're just a tremendous group of players to be around, a really talented team that won a lot of games. And if you got a team that wins a lot of games, you usually have a lot of fun on your broadcast. So it was, I can't say enough about the year I spent, the full-time year I spent there working with the Giants in the 09-10 season.
Chatting with Morley Scott right now here on White Spot Giants this week. He, of course, two separate stints behind the microphone, the Vancouver Giants, but the 2009-10 season, of course, the Giants go to round three of the playoffs, and some very notable personalities from that season. Want to get to that in a moment. But Morley, when you're behind the mic, you're calling games in the 09-10 season. Not to necessarily put you on the spot too bad, but was there an early moment or a junction of the season that comes to mind when you thought, oh, okay, this is going to be a memorable year for this team on the ice?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because I kind of went into it. I hadn't followed the WHL on a regular basis. I'd gone to, you know, an Oil King game here and there in Edmonton, but I hadn't really followed the league on a regular basis. So it took me a while to kind of get to know. Like, I didn't know the first line center from the fourth line center, if you give you a list, right? So I had to go, you know, through the preseason games watching and just kind of learning who the better players were and who the leaders were and you know, kind of who were the guys who controlled the games. And it didn't take me long to figure out that, you know, guys like Cunningham and Gallagher and Connaughton and Boma and those kind of players were the guys who kind of were the core of the group and controlled things. But I think the first sign I got was actually the first game. I remember they played in Kelowna to open up the season, and it was a penalty shot in overtime, not a shootout, but a penalty shot in overtime. Craig Cunningham scored to win the game, and then he won the game in overtime at home about 4 or 5 days later as well. And I realized that, hey, this team's got some gumption. You know, they can come from behind, they can build up big leads, they can do a lot of things. And it didn't take long to realize that it was a pretty special team. And then as the season went along, Scott Bonner made some pretty key trades to bring in some pretty notable players to make them an even better team and a more savvy team in the playoffs, to which, as you mentioned, they went to the Western Conference Final that before they were eliminated. So, yeah, it didn't take long. It's a pretty good hockey team.
So, Morley, Craig Cunningham, in 2009-10, he ended up with 47 more points that season, 97 points. It was the best season he ever had as a WHLer. I realize you weren't there in 08-09, but just based on conversations you had with Don Hay, conversations you had with Scott Bonner, and heck, even conversations you had with Craig that season, what was it about maybe that time in his career, factors that just led to that kind of breakout?
I think more than anything, it was just plain hard work. He was just a guy who put his nose to the grindstone. Every shift he worked hard. Every shift he would do something that would kind of go, oh, that's a pretty good play. It just seemed he was a guy who was destined to get better and better and better. And I think if you look at his totals going into that year, they had climbed each and every year, and this was the first year that he kind of got a lot of responsibility as an offensive player, and he just ran with it. He was, I think, top 10 and kind of playing tag with Jordan Eberle's, and I think it was Wheel, who was also one of the leaders in scoring in the WHL that year. He played tag with them for most of the season. I think he finished about 10 points back or so in the scoring race. But yeah, he was a gifted player and a guy who worked so hard, and a guy who had, you know, the story is a great story. His perseverance, you know, losing his father at a young age, and just the way he approached everything was just so workmanlike, and he just had a great attitude about everything. One of my best memories about him is when we kind of had a meeting one day, and the Olympic Committee had reached out to us and wanted to get one of our players to run in the flame in the torch relay.
Right.
And they kind of said, here are the kind of the criteria that we need in a person, right? You know, and then they wanted to have a good story, person. And I think it was me and Scott Bonner and Don Hay, and we just looked at each other and that's Cunner. It's got to be Craig Cunningham. And he ended up getting up like 4 o'clock in the morning one day and heading into downtown Vancouver, and he got to carry the Olympic torch for a while, which was a great story for him. And Ron Toigo brought his mother in to be able to watch him do that and everything. It was just a great experience, and it was kind of cool to see him do that. But yeah, he's one of the guys that I really have an affinity for, watching him play and the way he plays and the way he approaches everything, and to see the tragedy that hit him after he turned pro, and the way he handled it and the way he's bounced back from that. I mean, I got all the time in the world to talk about Craig Cunningham.
Definitely a friend of the program, a friend of the organization, certainly to this day. We're chatting with Morley Scott twice behind the mic with the Vancouver Giants doing play-by-play. You can hear him on Edmonton Radio reading the morning sports and also doing the play-by-play for the Edmonton football team. We'll talk a little bit of football towards the end here, Morley, but a few Giants-related questions to come your way here first. Brendan Gallagher, you had him for year two of his WHL career. He had 40 goals. He had 81 points. Fast forward to today, and he's got over 500 games in the NHL. He's got 334 career points. He was a fifth-round draft pick after your season with him. Has any of Brendan Gallagher's professional success thrown you but for any sort of surprise whatsoever?
You know what? Maybe I'm a little surprised at the offensive touch that he's had, but, I mean, he's earned that. He had a great offensive touch in the WHL, too. He had, I think, 340 goal seasons in the WHL. I know he scored 40 the year I was there. And he was a good player and another guy who worked so hard. And I think what endears you to Brendan is his work ethic and the way that he, you know, he's on his knees in front of the crease and he's banging in goals left and right. And it's funny. He was in a long scoring drought at one point this year, and I was sitting down to watch a Canadian game on TV, and I texted Scott Potter, who was the GM at the time when I was there, and I just said, I bet you Brendan scores tonight, and I bet you it's on a rebound on his knees. And Scott just texted me back and said, maybe on his belly. And that's kind of the way, you know, the way people recognize his ethic. He gets dirty. He gets his nose in there. He gets people mad at him. He jabs his stick in there, maybe just a little bit after the whistle, gets people upset at him, and then goes out and scores a goal, and there's nothing you can do about it. So he's a guy who's had great success, and it's because of his tenacity. He's got, he's not a big guy, but he's got that Theo Fleury kind of attitude where, you know, I'm going to look after myself, and if you're coming after me, you're going to have your hands full.
So we get through the regular season and then into the playoffs. It's a sweep of the Kamloops Blazers in round one. It is a back and forth series with the Portland Winterhawks in round number two. You ultimately prevail in six games. Then you get to round three, and it's a Tri-City Americans team that penultimately won the series in six games, Morley. But what are some of the memories that jump out to mind when you think about those three rounds of playoff hockey? And I mean, in your mind, I guess, how close were those Vancouver Giants to ultimately getting to the WHL final in your mind?
I really will always remember the first series against the Kamloops Blazers. It was a four-game sweep, but it was probably the hardest any team has ever had to work for a four-game sweep. I did the math on it one time, Dan, and I don't remember what it was, and I don't know where the sketchings are at this point. But I'm pretty sure in that four-game series, the Giants held the lead for like maybe 6 or 7 minutes in the entire series. They were down all series, and they came back. They won two games in overtime. They were down the entire series, it seems, in games, but battled back game after game after game to stay in it and get the win at the very end. And I remember one of my most vivid memories from the whole season is the game four in Kamloops. And I'm in the booth doing the game, and as you know, to the right is usually where the management sits from the Kamloops Blazers.
Yep. Yes, yes,
and,
yes.
And I forget Mark Recchi's brother's name.
Matt. Yep.
Yeah, he was in there, and there was a couple of other guys who were in that booth, and with about the Blazers had the lead, I believe, for most of the game. Giants came back and tied it, and then with about 5 minutes or less to go in the game, Brendan Gallagher scores the game-winning goal. And I'm doing the usual, you know, yelling and screaming about the little big man getting the big goal. And I look over, and Recchi's looking at me through the glass, and I will never forget his face, because it was just a face that said, you know, we've been playing so well. We've had the lead in every game. We've had every game under control. And we're going to lose this series in 4 games straight. And I think at that point in the playoffs, I thought this team really had a chance to get maybe farther than it actually did. But, yeah, that team really came together during that series. I think James Henry scored an overtime goal, and I'm not sure who scored the other overtime goal. But might have been Brett Brightcruz maybe. But, yeah, it was a real gutsy performance by a team. And honestly, they had the lead for like 7 or 8 minutes in the entire series and won it in 4 straight games.
So then, Morley, the decision and the opportunity then comes your way to head back to Edmonton, and it's a post that you've kept, you know, until present day. Can you talk about some of the bittersweet feelings of leaving the Giants after one season, and then eventually some seeds were planted for an eventual return? Can you just share with us kind of how that all unfolded and kind of how it ultimately transitioned to where you are today?
Yeah, it was really tough to leave, because I was very happy. It was near the end of my first year, and the plan was my family stayed behind in Edmonton while I was working in Vancouver, and I have family in Vancouver, so I was lucky enough to be living with my sister and her family in Langley, which made for some long drives, but still it was comforting to have family around me. My family stayed in Edmonton, my wife and my 2 kids, and there was kind of a plan to come out to Vancouver at some point if the job went well, and the job was certainly going well, but my mom's mother was not doing well, and at that point she didn't want to leave her mom at that point in her life, and then the job with 630 Ched came up for doing football games, and so I applied for it, ended up getting it, and I remember sitting on the edge of my bed in Langley and typing out an email to Ron Toigo to give him my resignation, and it was tough to hit the send button, because it was a job I really enjoyed, the job I really liked. So, but I'm happy where I am now. Things are great, and I'm looking forward to life getting back to normal, which would mean some more CFL football coming my way in the next 6 months or so.
So, very early on, kind of in the decade, right around kind of 2012-13, you did, you know, briefly return to the booth for the Vancouver Giants, bit of a transition and, you know, on the ice and off the ice, really, in a number of ways. But the chance to return that season, your path would have crossed with me a couple of times during some games in Prince George. And I guess segueing from there, I mean, here we are in 2020. Do you still find yourself checking box scores? I mean, I know you're in the heart of Edmonton, but when the Vancouver Giants were going to Game 7 of the WHL Final a year and a half ago, were you all ears at that point?
Yeah, I went to the games, as you'll recall.
Of course.
I got to jump on a plane, so I ended up getting one of those cheap flights, and I ended up flying out. My sister was even out of town at the time, so I stayed in an empty house and had a car to use, and basically just went to the games, which was a lot of fun. The outcome wasn't very good for those games, but it was fun to go back and see, and it was neat to see them in their new home at the Langley Event Center, because during the Olympic year, when I was there, we played 6 home games there, and it was a pretty cool environment and a pretty neat place to play. So it was kind of neat that it worked out that they ended up moving there on a full-time basis, which was kind of cool. So, yeah, and as you mentioned, I went back for a few games 2 or 3 years after my year, and that was a lot of fun. I was honored that they approached me about that. I remember I was doing a football game in Montreal, and in the fourth quarter of the football game, I looked down and my phone started to ring, and it was Pete Toigo. And I thought, oh, I wonder what that's about. So I did the rest of the game, walked back to the hotel and phoned Pete, and he filled me in and said, hey, any chance you can help us out here a little bit? And I said, absolutely. So it worked out really well. I would work in Edmonton all week, and then I was doing the morning show on Ched, get off the air at 9 and drive right to the airport, get like an 11 o'clock flight to Vancouver and do, you know, a couple games in Vancouver, or I flew to Portland a couple times, flew to Kamloops a couple times, or drove to the Alberta games. Had a great week and a half or so with all the Alberta games, driving Bill Wilms around in my vehicle through Alberta, picked him up at the airport, and we did the Alberta swing and had a great time driving all over the place. So yeah, I was pretty happy. It's pretty exciting for them to invite me back and trust me enough to do a few more games. The team wasn't nearly as good that year as it was the year I did games in 09-10, but it was a lot of fun.
I just had a podcast idea, Morley. Car stories with Bill Wilms.
He's got some stories, doesn't he?
It's incredible.
You could throw a name out of a kid who played in the WHL 15 years ago, or a kid who's a 14-year-old somewhere and going to play in a WHL, he can probably tell you something about him. I loved working with Bill. He was a great guy to be around, a great guy to show you the ropes. And I don't know if there's a more prepared color man in junior hockey than Bill Wilms, with the knowledge and the research and the insight that he has into the game. Pretty good hockey player in his day, pretty good golfer in his day as well. So yeah, and a real good storyteller. I enjoyed a lot of car trips with Bill Wilms for sure.
Still a very good storyteller, still a very good golfer.
And he still likes, does he still like the medium coffee in a large cup with no lid?
Oh, man. Nothing gets by you, Morley. Nothing gets by you.
That's what he used to always, if I was getting him coffee, that's what he'd ask for. If he was getting coffee, that's what he would order, a medium coffee in a large cup with no lid, because he didn't like drinking out of the lids. And I don't think he ever spilt a drop either.
Oh, that's where I think we're going to have to disagree on that one. But you know, another story is for another day. We'll do that on the Bill Wilms Car Story podcast.
How about his wallpapering of the booths too? I mean, every piece of paper taped all over the place. It was like he redecorated every booth around the Western Hockey League with all his with his tape and his paper.
An absolute legend, and I can't tell you how fortunate I feel to have shared a booth with him for the past 3 years, and nothing will feel better than getting back in there with him when the puck drops again for 2020-21. A football one for you, Morley, before we let you go. It actually just dawned on me as we're having this conversation that yesterday should have been Grey Cup Sunday. The Edmonton football team obviously is synonymous with Edmonton and a huge part of the fabric of that city. Can you just talk a little bit about the latest with the CFL? A schedule has been released. I know that there is sincere hope that come 2021 we will be playing football again. How excited are you to think about that? And is the league going to be able to survive this in your mind?
I'm very excited about it, actually, because it's been a long time. It's been about a year since I did my last game, which would have been the Eastern Final last year when Edmonton was in Hamilton to play to the Ticats, who then went on to play in the Grey Cup against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. So it's been a long time, and I'm very much looking forward to getting back in the booth and trying to figure out how to ride the bike again. The CFL has a plan. They have several plans that they're trying to work out, but more than anything else, they're hoping that the vaccine will solve the problem and they'll be able to get some fans in the stands. And that's like the WHL, that's the situation for the CFL. They need to have fans in the stands. They need to sell some tickets to be viable financially. And if they can't, it's going to be an issue for them moving forward. But regardless of what happens going forward, they have to find a way to play in 2021. They were pretty much the only league, pro league, that didn't play in 2020. You know, we watched the NFL and see the NCAA plan, and it's cool to see football, but it kind of hurts to think that they're playing and the CFL is not. Hockey made it through, basketball made it through, lacrosse is going to make an attempt at it in the fall, so they got to figure out a way to make it happen no matter what they do. So that will be their goal to get through. But yeah, they're planning to play. They want to play. They need to play in 2021. And I was part of the reason they've released the schedule. and they've started talking about things moving forward, and I'm sure we'll get a lot more football news from them over the next few months rather than virus-related news.
So, Morley, when this conversation runs, it's almost about 10:30 p.m. on a Monday night. Let's set the internet on fire right now. What are you going to name the Edmonton football team?
You know what? I'm kind of. It seems every second or third day I change opinions. Right now, I like Elk, which was the team name back in the 20s, I believe. They even went to a Grey Cup once as the Edmonton Elk. It's a very Western Canada kind of name, Northern Alberta kind of name, and I think that is what my choice is right now. But I mean, they just opened up yesterday. It's not a contest; it's more of an opening for fans to give their suggestions for the team name, and they're doing that on through their website and through Twitter. And I think they're going to get some interesting choices put in front of them. The goal is to whittle that down to about four or five. Throw that out to the public and see what they get, and then make the decision. The team is opening up to fans to give their suggestion, but they are—it's not a contest, so the team's still going to make the decision at the end of the day. But they will do that in consultation with the fans, and they're aiming for probably late March or early April to make that announcement in time for the 2021 season.
Morley, I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I always do. Thank you very much for taking the time to hop on with us. Continued health, safety, good vibes, positivity to you and your family. And I sure look forward to our next conversation. Stay safe, my friend. Thanks for taking the trip down memory lane with us today.
Thanks, Dan. It was a lot of fun and always is to talk Giants hockey.
White Spot Giants this week on Sportsnet 650. We're coming back with Dylan Plouffe next. Stay with us. Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to White Spot Giants this week here on Sportsnet 650. My name is Dan O'Connor. Pleased to have you along with us. And we have had a very Edmontonian kind of show so far. Big thanks to Morley Scott for hopping on with us in segment number one. And for part two of this show, we head back to Alberta. And we head back to chat with an individual who certainly became a fan favorite and a household name with the Vancouver Giants over the course of his lengthy WHL career. Dylan Plouffe was a defenseman who spent parts of five seasons with the Giants, ended up appearing in 272 career games with Vancouver, the eighth most in franchise history, and the second most games of any defenseman to ever suit up for the Giants. Dylan Plouffe joins me now on White Spot Giants this week. Dylan, it's it feels like just yesterday in some ways, but it also feels like so friggin' much has happened since you and I last spoke, man. But thanks for taking the time. It's good to chat with you, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Dano. Yeah, it has been a while. It seems, I don't know, with the whole stuff that's going on, it seems, I mean, shorter than it's actually been. But, happy to be on here.
Good stuff, man. Well, let's do a bit of a deep dive. You had an awesome junior career, and your hockey career is continuing, and we'll get to that in due course. But to start with, can we go back to the very beginning and Bantam Draft Day? What do you remember about the day you were drafted to the Vancouver Giants? And was the WHL kind of always the preferred method for you? Were you always sort of leaning in that direction, or was there a part of you that was maybe considering junior A, NCAA, and that path?
Honestly, it always, as a young kid like that, you always kind of flip-flop ideas. But for me, I found that just the way the style I played was that I did want to play in the WHL kind of growing up with the Oil Kings coming back. Kind of piqued my interest that way, and it kind of didn't really waver off from that.
So you sign with the Giants, you get into one game as an underager in the 2014-15 regular season, and ironically, I think that game was in Medicine Hat, and that was the city, of course, where you would end your WHL career. But, I mean, tell me about some of the really early days of your career, Dylan. I mean, was it difficult making the adjustment going from midget to junior, and maybe at what point early on did you maybe all of a sudden look and think, okay, yeah, I'm starting to figure this out. I'm starting to feel, quote, a little more comfortable maybe with life in the WHL?
I mean, my first couple of years was definitely a whirlwind. Going through a couple coaching changes, GM changes, and a lot of new faces in the dressing room. So that was something that I had to adjust to. I mean, pretty fast, having one of my roommates and being Clay Kirchenko get traded, that was my first real taste of how junior hockey was like. You can be here one day, be there the next. But I think I started to figure things out, I want to say around Christmas time at 16. It was kind of just figuring out what I needed to do to play well and kind of make steps forward and, I guess, playing better, playing more often, and in bigger situations. So that's something I found. I got put into the lineup because of injuries at the, I guess, quarter mark of that year, and kind of took a step forward and just building up my confidence, even when we weren't the best team. But just getting that experience helps anyone. I think that's what helped me in my first year.
You score your first WHL goal against Medicine Hat on December the 2nd, and I'm not sure if you even knew this, but on December the 6th of 2015, I would have called your second ever goal in the WHL, and I would have I would have done it as the voice of the Prince George Cougars at the time, but you know, there you were, and kind of getting your feet wet, as you say, during your 16-year-old season. You touched on it a little bit in your previous answer, Dylan, but I mean, the first 2 years for you in the WHL were a challenge, you know, on the ice, certainly with wins and losses. But I mean, gosh, you play in 120 games over the, you know, your 16-year-old season, your 17-year-old season. How tough was it to go through some of those growing pains, and what were some of the factors, be it teammates, be it coaching, be it, you know, what were some of the things that kind of helped keep you motivated and excited early on when things were maybe not going so great?
Yeah, I mean, if you ask any athlete of any sport, it's very, very tough to go through losing seasons and losing in general. So, I mean, the one thing that I found helped me, I mean, keep going was having such a good young core of guys to hang around with, become, I mean, best friends with. And that was Dawson Holt, Owen Hardy, and at the time Brandon Semchuk before he got traded pretty early on. But us guys, we really stuck together, and kind of, no one ever really said this, but it just kind of like, hey, we're in this together, so let's make the best out of it. And I mean, as you can see, as the years went on, sticking it out really gave us some good memories.
Chatting right now with Dylan Plouffe. He is an alumnus of the Vancouver Giants, 272 career WHL games with Vancouver. 2017-18, your first season, or our first season working together, you and I, and that season as a whole is a remarkably positive one to look back on when you look at the, you know, the return to the playoffs, the individual success for a lot of guys, yourself included, and then that 7-game playoff series with the Victoria Royals. Thinking back to that season, Dylan, what were some of the factors that led to the turnaround? And I just got the sense on most days, if not every day that season, man, that the guys were just genuinely happy to be at the rink.
Yeah, it was, I mean, definitely a turnaround from my first two seasons, just because, I mean, the team morale was way up when we were starting to win games. That always helps. And, I mean, becoming older, too, is something that I found definitely helped too. That's when your confidence goes up and you're playing well and you're happy. And that's what, I mean, the biggest difference for me, that, like you touched on, was just everyone being happy. And that's the biggest part about having fun. And obviously being successful in this game is just, you got to have fun to do well. And that's what we were doing. And we were having a lot of fun doing it.
Dylan, I maintain, and a lot of the guys that I talk to maintain this as well, that, that playoff series with the Victoria Royals, to this day, I don't care what anybody says, I think the Vancouver Giants had every reasonable right to think and to believe that they were capable of winning that series, and you damn nearly did, taking them to overtime at home in Game 6, leading the series 3-2. What do you remember about that series? What do you remember about that rivalry? And as a two-parter to that, some of the tough lessons that you had to learn from that series that maybe ultimately paved the way for future success?
The ups and downs of a playoff series. I mean, that one was back and forth, punch for punch, and it was fun. I mean, the amount of times we played those guys in the regular season, I think it's 10. Yep. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, you got it for sure.
But and then playing those guys another 7 times, that, I mean, you really got to know your opponent. But every game it was different, and every game you had to do something different to be successful. And that was also the fun of it. We saw ways we could get better from one game to the next and try different things. And ultimately the next season, I mean, I think that helped us exponentially, having a lot of guys going through that one series, even if it was just one round. But it was something that we learned from, and I mean, didn't ultimately end up in what we wanted, but it definitely was an experience that I know none of us will forget.
Chatting with Dylan Plouffe here on White Spot Giants this week. He's an alumnus defenseman with the team. 307 career WHL games, 272 regular season games with the Vancouver Giants. So then, Dylan, all of a sudden you're 19. You've got a bunch of NHL summer camps and training camps under your belt. There's a new head coach in town. There's a new GM in town. And the Vancouver Giants are poised to make a run. We all know where they'd end up. We all know, and we'll get to that, I promise you. But I ask a lot of guys this question, and I'm going to ask you, and I'll tell you if you answer the way I think you're going to. At what point in 2018-19 did the Vancouver Giants go from a really good team to a team that just flat out knew in every corner of their mind that they had the potential to be a championship caliber team?
Well, it is cliche, but you say at the beginning of the season, yes. But I mean, with any team, you don't fully expect that right at the beginning of the season. You want to get to a good start and this and that. But I find one thing for me was, after Christmas, when kind of everything settled down, we got some new faces in the dressing room. That's when we kind of turned to a team where it was like, hey, this is our time to see what we can do, do something special. So why not do it? And I think, I forget the record we had going into the playoffs, but it was something pretty nuts. But yeah. I think for me, it was when we kind of got to settled down with the familiarity of all the new players, and then just kind of built from there, and it was just full steam ahead.
Dawson Holt had a very similar answer to that last week, Dylan. Now, the one game that comes to mind and where I thought you might go with this was on a Thursday night in late January. It is after Christmas. The team had the team as it was going to be was together. The only hockey game on, the only junior hockey game in the world that was on that night was the Prince Albert Raiders and the Vancouver Giants on national TV at the LEC. You beat them 3-1. What do you remember about that game? And was there any part of you looking back that thought, ooh, this would be fun in May?
That was one game that we thought about all year. We watched video on that game multiple times, and I mean, always prepared ourselves to play that way because, I mean, nothing's perfect, but that was probably, if not the most perfect game we played that year. It was just, we knew it was at stake, and they were the team that was everyone was looking at, so it's like, hey, why not show them what we got on national TV, like you said, and we proved it.
We'll talk about the series with the Raiders in a moment, Dylan, but the journey to get there through Seattle, through Victoria, through Spokane, Is there a game? Is there a moment? Is there a portion of the run before the finals that sticks out to you as kind of a highlight above all others?
Yeah, there's one that was in the Spokane series. I think we were up 2-1 in the series. Game four, we were in overtime, and Dawson was ripping down the wing on the right side and just wired one shelf. And as soon as he scored that, we were up 3-1 going back home, and it's like, wow, we can it looks like, because I know we believed, like, hey, we're going to go home, go win this, and then go to the finals. And that was a huge goal. Instead of coming back home 2-2, going up 3-1 in overtime, it was like, holy. And that one sticks out in my mind because it was a hell of a goal, but just the reaction we got from every player on that bench was like, that was big. And that's something that sticks out to me.
Dylan, we're a year and a half removed from May the 13th, 2019, Game 7 against the Prince Albert Raiders. Do you still think about it? How often do you think about it? And has enough time passed since then where the memories turn to more positive thoughts, or is that something that's kind of always going to stick with you for bittersweet reasons?
I don't think it's bittersweet. I mean, there's nothing you can change now. Obviously, you wanted to win, but, I mean, you kind of got to live in the moment. And thinking about all the good times I had that whole year, that was the funnest year of hockey I've ever had. And everything we did with that team was something I'll remember and cherish my whole life. I don't think there's going to be anything bittersweet to that. It was something that was special, and the only way you're going to be able to, I guess, understand that feeling is to go through it. And I'm so happy that I went through it with everyone I did.
Well said, for sure. Just a few more questions here for Dylan Plouffe, Vancouver Giants alumnus, former defenseman for the team, now at the University of Alberta. And we'll segue to that in a moment, Dylan. So last season, you start as one of the 20-year-olds with the Vancouver Giants. And for the first 3 or so months of that season, it just felt, and I think we all felt it, we all lived it together, but if it was one step forward, then it was a half step back. And for whatever reason, the Giants just had a really tough time getting some traction going permanently in the first half of that season. And I don't know if it was just the expectation, the influx of new bodies, regardless of what it may have been. However, early December, your phone rings and you're told the news that you're a part of a massive blockbuster deal that trades you and Lukas Svejkovský to the Medicine Hat Tigers. The Giants are the only WHL team you've ever known to this point. You didn't get traded 6 times in your career. You got traded once. What do you remember about the day and just the emotion that goes along with having to say farewell to the only team at that point that you had ever known in the WHL?
It was very, very weird. It was after, actually, I got pulled into the room after the Spokane game, the first game we wore the Grinch jerseys, and that's when I was told, and flew out 6 a.m. the next day and played that night. That was a long day. But, kind of leaving everything behind. You kind of have time to think about that after the fact and weeks later and maybe days later. I forget when I thought about it, but it was like, holy, I'm not here anymore, and kind of getting adjusted to everything that was new around me. It was tough, but I mean, being a part of a hockey team and I guess being with one guy that I played on a team with and go to a new one with was something that helped a bit too, but it was just, it's definitely always tough for anyone to move anywhere or change their surroundings and kind of get used to it. But it was good. I mean, for the short amount of time I was there, it was good. And I mean, the Giants figured things out as well, which was nice to see. And I mean, one of the guys I got traded with, well, for, I'm on a team now with, so we kind of have laughs about that every day. So it was good.
Tyler Pazuzu, of course, now a teammate of yours at the U of A. So, I mean, we all know what happened. We all know how the season ended. You know, we didn't get a champion. We didn't get to give the 20-year-olds and everybody their real, true, appropriate send-off. But, I mean, Dylan, I mean, you've had a lot of time to kind of think about things, and obviously we're on to a new chapter for you at the U of A. But, I mean, when you think back to your tenure with the Giants and 270-plus games, another 30-odd games in the playoffs, I mean, I realize it's a loaded question, but I do want to kind of give you the opportunity to just say any thanks to Billets, thanks to the city, thanks to the fans, thanks to anybody really in the Vancouver area that played such a big part in your life for 5 years.
I mean, the biggest thanks would be my Billets, and that would be the Burbages. They took me in and did everything they could to make me feel like I was at home, and I could not thank them enough. That's the biggest part of junior hockey, I find, is your Billets and being there for hours on end and being able to feel comfortable when you're not actually at home is something that I know everyone in someone's family is concerned about, being parents or anyone else, but that's the biggest thanks I want to give. And I mean, to the whole Giants organization, starting with Ron and Barkley and Dicker and Huey and, of course, you. Just thanks for, being genuine people. And the end of my career there, everything was great. And there's nothing bad I can say about anyone. It was just great memories that, like I said earlier, that I'm going to cherish for the rest of my life and have people to connect with the rest of my life. It's something that is truly special about the hockey world, is having that many people to be surrounded by every day and having laughs with. That's the thing that people don't realize, is just what people love about hockey the most is what's inside the dressing room. Usually not as much on the ice, but inside the dressing room is what makes you enjoy the game that much more. And everyone surrounded in the Giants organization made that happen for every single person a part of our organization through those 5 years that I was there. And having turning things around was something that helped too, but it was just an overall great experience, and I could not thank them enough.
Remarkably well said. Dylan, why the U of A? And from there, I mean, you've always been a very, you know, well-read and scholastically inclined individual. Have you kind of zeroed in on a plan as far as school goes? Is pro hockey still a possibility for you maybe in 4 or 5 years once you're done? I mean, give us the plan as best as you can as things currently stand.
Well, why U of A? I wanted to come back home, and that was probably the biggest part of it, come back home a little bit, but also having the U of A right in my backyard and having a very historic hockey program, then there was really no other option for me. It was like, hey, a great hockey team with great schooling, and there's no real negatives to the decision I made. And as for hockey, obviously I still want to play pro, and we'll see where things go from, I guess, the next couple of years. So obviously going to keep my options open there. But for school, exploring a couple different options right now, whether it be going to business or maybe economics. But, I mean, I'm keeping my options open, just seeing what I like and what I enjoy, and kind of playing it by ear. I guess I feel like that's what people in university kind of do, is decide once they're there. And I think that's what I'm doing. I'm just kind of rolling with the punches and doing as best as I can, learning from my computer.
Well, yeah, man, it's definitely a weird time for all of us. But, you know, what one of the constants for me, you know, really through much of my tenure with the Vancouver Giants, Dylan, was you and a lot of the guys that you mentioned. I mean, I feel very fortunate to have had 3 years where I saw you, you know, at least three or four times a week, every week for a good while of time, man. And I really, you know, I appreciate it a lot. I always appreciated these conversations with you. You're a great speaker. You're very honest, and you're a hell of a hockey player, man, and a great guy. And I want to wish you and your family just the utmost in safety and good vibes and positivity as we kind of work through this pandemic together. But beyond that as well, Dylan, I mean, just with schooling, with hockey, and with life, man, keep up the good work. Thanks and congratulations on a great WHL career. And I sure hope we can have another one of these conversations again soon, man.
Hey, thanks, Dano. And anytime. Yeah, just want to thank you for making me feel very welcome in these conversations, and always being able to have that genuine conversation is something that I always loved hanging around you. And whether it be about sports or anything, that was something that I always enjoyed talking to you about, because we could just go back and forth at it for, I mean, hours. So I appreciate that, and wish your family the utmost health as well. And I'll send you those good vibes back. But I'd love to talk anytime. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Dylan Plouffe, alumnus of the Vancouver Giants here on White Spot Giants This Week. A huge thanks to him. Big thanks to Morley Scott, and a huge thanks to you as well. We'll talk to you next Monday. Stay safe. This has been White Spot Giants This Week on Sportsnet 650.